is a production of Cornell University.
Today is February 23rd, not January 26th, and I'll now call this meeting the GPSA to order. So first, roll call of the voting members. For physical sciences, Jeffrey. I'm here, Catherine's here. Humanities, Jesse. Christy. Christine.
Christine's not going to be here.
Social sciences, William.
Here.
Todd. Liz.
Here.
Professional schools, John.
Here.
Alexander.
Here.
Kara.
She's not going to be here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Biological sciences, Cora.
Here.
Anne. Ian. And Kate. And then here. Masters, Ashley. And Kane.
Here.
So next we'll go to approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections to the minutes?
Yes. For B, resolution 6, instead of saying C, Yao presented a similar resolution, it should say gave a presentation on these issues last semester. It's the third page.
Third page. So
the first paragraph.
First line. Presented a similar resolution on.
It should say gave a presentation
on
these issues last semester.
Okay. Are there any other corrections for me? All right. So then, is there a motion to approve the minutes as corrected? Is there a second? All right. Asked unanimous consent to approve the minutes. Is there anyone opposed? Seeing no opposition, the minutes are approved as corrected. And so now we'll go right into our presentation. So I guess we'll have Greg coming to us from the GPCI Working Group on Mental Health and Wellness.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you taking the time to only speak with you about this. I'm glad we're not repeating February again. We don't want to do that. So I really want to talk to you a little bit about the GPCI. All of you are familiar with it. We've had a committee working on this. One of the main reasons I wanted to come here with you to talk to you today is we really need your input. So we convened two meetings last year in the spring and had one graduate student who came and kind of listened to what we talked about, and then graduated, which is what you're supposed to do, right? And we haven't had anybody on our committee since then, and we haven't really met. So in those two meetings, we went over some things I'm going to go over with you briefly today. But if anyone is interested, definitely email me and we will convene a meeting this spring or two. My email address is gte3, so if you are interested and if anything comes up that you feel really passionate about in this presentation, feel free to email me. So just a few things about our response. How many of you have seen the health services response to the GPCI? We put out a couple of years ago. Did you see it? So I can get you copies. If you'd like to see the whole report, I'm going to hit some of the highlights. But one of the things one of the common misperceptions when we talk about mental health services for graduate students, one of them is that graduate students don't use them. And our data actually tells the opposite story. So for medical services, 77% of undergraduates use this for medical care, 77% of professional students do, and 92% of graduate students do. So we actually see far more graduate students in medical services. Also, you're relying on us more for primary care for visit numbers. Undergraduate 2.8, professionals 2.8, graduate students 3.4. So you're receiving more primary care students, graduate students, than professional students or undergraduates. For mental health services, that's also true. We see 17% of undergraduates, 15% of professional students, and 19% of graduate students. So this kind of idea that graduate students don't receive their mental health care as fast is not true either based on our numbers. We actually provide longer term care to graduate students. So we look at average visits. We see undergrads, the mean visits are 5.6, professional students 5.4, and graduate students 7.6. Now some of that is because a lot of you unfortunately are here more. I mean, we've seen some of the graduate students for 6, 7, 8 years. We do provide longer term care. We operate from a short term therapy model, but we do work with people to kind of stabilize them, get them the care that they need. And we do provide graduate students a longer-term care based on our availability and based on their needs. We actually do quite a bit for graduate students. How many of you go to get up on that page and see There's an especially for graduate students section of the webpage, which outlines all kinds of information for new graduate students and professional students. There's a section for students with children, and many graduate students are different phases in their lives, their family, and children. I know you have a group working on those issues. We have a section on the website for that. International Cornell Youth, we also have a section for the internet. Our graduate students are coming from other countries, so we have a section of the webpage that addresses some of those unique concerns. And then also a section for spouses and partners of graduate students. So there are those specific things that I think many of you may not have heard of, may not be aware of. Also, we've done a variety of things. The Counseling Service to improve accessibility services. We have extended hours, so we are available for walk-in consultation until 7. So if your schedule doesn't fit in the 8 to 5 time, we can kind of get you into therapy, get you started at those times. Also on Saturdays, we're available. We do online brief assessment. It's kind of the first way in, which you can schedule online at any time that's convenient for you. You don't have to talk to someone on the phone. We offer 14 to 15 groups a year. Many of those are directed specifically to graduate students. We have a graduate women's therapy group, a growth through connection, which is a group for graduate students, positive action through interaction, other graduate student groups. So we really target actually a disproportionate number of our groups because that's where we go to need is to graduate students as well. We offer Let's Talk sites. Some of you are familiar with the Let's Talk program. A few of you where you can just drop in. It's a consultation with the therapist. We put those in places that are intentionally accessible to graduate students. Caldwell Hall, Myron Taylor Hall, Law School, Sage Hall, Business School, Sherman Hall, Vet School. We also have a variety of other places where you can go if you don't want to go somewhere where you might see some graduate students. Maybe we're here to invite you. So, or maybe just feel more anonymous. The whole idea of Let's Talk is you can decide wherever it's easiest for you to accept services. We also offer a Let's Meditate program, which is open to faculty, staff, graduate students, undergraduates. We've seen a high number of utilization in the Let's Meditate program. Any of you taking advantage of the Let's Meditate program? All right, a couple people. What do you think? Pretty helpful. Nice break. I think it's a great opportunity to just kind of get away from some of the stressors. We're trying to continue to do that. We also do a lot of outreach. How many of you have seen our notice and response programs that we have? I know many of you teach, so if you're working with other undergraduates and maybe dealing with mental health issues, give you some pretty helpful suggestions about how to get them connected. Also, good information even to think about your own resources, and what things you may be dealing with. We have a variety of newsletters, Health at Cornell, a lot of different things that we offer through the website, our communications, which many of you have seen. If you've used a restroom at Cornell, you probably see 24/7 good ad, right? Anyway, that's how we want to be associated. If you have to use a restroom, right? You can help them. But the idea is, everybody has to use a restroom, it's there, everyone's going to see it. You're going to at least think about it. If you need to talk to somebody, if you want to talk to somebody about your mental health care or your physical health care, you can do that. Also, student disability services is part of the health service. They do a lot of work with graduate students around accommodations. We'll work with you very, a lot of their work has to be very individualized, but they do a lot of work with graduate students and try to be accessible to make your educational experience as positive as possible. The other component of our work was also looking at the Cornell Fitness Centers. So that was where, actually, one of our meetings was informational. The other one was about fitness center and fitness center hours, which I'm sure any of you have concerns about. Those are things we'd like to talk about. I'm kind of representing Tish Kippings, who's now retiring, her kind of view on this. Part of the problem is the Cornell Fitness Centers aren't subsidized by the university, so they have to come out of your own fee. This results in fitness centers that are over capacity, meaning more people want to work out there than they can safely allow. So not everybody who's interested can even get to work out there. There's not a large fitness center like you've worked at. Maybe you've been at other universities, right? So they have a big help. A fitness center, you pay a health fee or fitness fee, and that goes to support a big center. That's not how Cornell does fitness. There's a lot of smaller centers that are oftentimes fairly overcrowded. And they have worked on hours over time. That's been one of the common complaints, is their hours are accessible. For them, unfortunately, they rely on undergraduate staffing, so times very break, they're not open. Which is oftentimes you want to go, right? The undergraduates aren't there. You want to go work out, it's not a crowd. But that's kind of a catch 22 for them. So those are some of the main issues we talked about for the fitness center. And just kind of leave it open for questions. If there are things you're interested in, questions you have, I'll do my best to answer questions about the fitness center from our conversation. But anything about Gannett or the Council of Fitness Facilities, Any of the things that touch. Yeah, starting over here, work around.
The kind you gave for graduate students who use CNAPS for psychological services.
90%.
That number includes people that go outside of CNAPS, but never really use CNAPS for referral.
It includes some of those too. So, you know, that's a harder thing to separate because we sometimes will see a grad student for a year. I'm like, well, you know, I talk to my therapist sometimes every other week, so I'd like to see him every week. So, or I'm doing better, I'd like to get off campus. So it includes the full range of people who are seeing for, you know, every week for years or longer, some people who may be in multiple classes. So it includes all. But the mean visit is still higher, which is the case. We are seeing some. And some we refer out sometimes just because they want to or something like that. I'm not sure. Sometimes it's because the student health insurance is really good and covers them for all. But it's usually a conversation. We definitely the graduate student wants to say it. Absolutely. Yes.
Hi.
Yeah.
Just for some clarification then. So the fitness center is 100% funded by
That's what I do per petition.
Okay.
But again, I'm a little bit out of my expertise, but that's not my not right away, but yes, from our conversation.
Okay, thank you.
Rachel, you
may
I was wondering, how do we compare and percentage of private students seeking mental health services? How do we compare to other populations? So what are we, I'm just wondering, could we be doing more to reach out to the department and go to the community, you know, for these preventative programs? Students who are very stressed out, they're not going to be focused on their own mental wellness. And so, while I know that those less Medicaid sessions have a better way, I would like to answer those people who need more support. So, A, is going to try to compare the population, and B, waiting about how we're doing that.
I think, you know, one of the things that I've worked at several different universities, counseling centers, and three other universities. I think from what I've heard from graduate students here, the experience of being a graduate student feels more isolated here in the United States. Partly because of the nature of Cornell as an institution, it's very decentralized, and colleges do all do their own thing, and graduate students that are kind of straddling these things and very isolated in some way, which makes it really hard to do that. And which is why we've done this talk about Medicaid. How do we reach folks for that reason? But yeah, I think there's still more we can do. It's really, really hard. That's why we've done those in the summer. Kind of talk to faculty, think about your residency, think about your role, think about, you would expect you to be a therapist, but you are, you can be a good human being as part of the community, be aware of your graduate students and allow them to not exploit them and not do some of the things that make graduate students work really hard. So we've tried to get that message out, but we'd be glad to have you on the committee for any other ideas that you have.
And
sorry,
right, so we have an idea.
In terms of utilization, I mean, I think
the health outcomes
speak now. The utilization, we're about right now with our graduate students, maybe a little bit higher. Depends on their graduate student makeup. We have more graduate student populations. Yeah.
I was wondering if you currently have any data or plan on vaccinating on international graduate students, and specifically that for international undergrad, and if they choose they
Yeah, I mean, that's something we have to, we have some larger surveys we can collect and splice that data with institutional research. It's not something that the health service we're looking at, which I think it goes beyond people's coming health service. So, I mean, what survey data is already out there? How do people look from different backgrounds, their experience, their stress, experience, and information? So, I mean, those are good questions that the committee can have put to institutional research based on some of their surveys. I mean, we have to work with them to get mental health questions on the site. You know, so, those would be ways we'd love to have you work with the advocates. Other questions?
Yeah.
Not that I know of, no. Yeah. But I think until the funding model changes in some way, I think it's really challenging for my first assumption. I could say you have to pay to be a member. And again, I'm a little bit out of my element. Right, but like the workout facility, I think the pool, you have to have, like if the staff member, I have to sign up as a member, I can't just slide out.
Student, you don't have to. Okay. You just like,
I'm glad to hear that some of the services have had expanded hours, because one of the main frustrations I've heard about healthcare at Cornell, mental health care and otherwise, is confusion about where to seek care if a crisis occurs after NS hours. So I was hoping you could provide some clarity on where students go when NS is closed.
Yeah, we're open from 8:30 to 7, Monday through Thursday, and then 8:30 to 5 on Friday, and we're open from 10 to 4:30 on Saturday. During those times, you can just walk in. All the other times, we have an on-call, and the nurse takes the first kind of triage, and we're going to schedule an appointment with the agency to come up with a whole different council. So the 255-5155 number, always connect you with somebody 24/7, you can walk in and bring in others.
I had a question. So thank you for all the information on the health services. So I guess what we were trying to get at is, so there were like a set of objectives and action items that were given to the material committee, I guess. So we were wondering if you could hear progress on what those action items were, how...
I think one of the things we'd like from you is to what extent, I mean, some of the action items were things that we felt we were already doing, which we responded to. So what we would like, I guess, for more participation is, and what I don't think we got was, what else, you know, based on this, what else still needs to be done? So I think that's the next step.
Okay.
Because I think there was like, we think you should do this. I said, well, we're already doing this. I was like, oh, I didn't know that. And so now we need the, how much of it's been done? Are there things like data or other outreach efforts that we'd like to hear from your members to kind of see, here's where we, here's what you said, here's how we responded, what's next? So we'd like to have members on that committee to kind of help do that.
I was wondering if I could ask about integration between services in ed and sort of other community services. I know for psychological services in particular that GNET psychiatric services are available to be things that are outside counseling.
Sure.
Is there any, I know a lot of people who have got pretty messed up because the availability of psychiatric services outside of GNET in the community are fairly limited, especially. The reason we do that
is because we only are staffed with psychiatrists enough to provide psychiatric care to the people being seen by 20-30 parents. So, you know, there's some of it's the nature of the psychiatry in rural communities here and everywhere. It's pretty much you pay out of pocket and you have to accept patients. That's a challenge that we face. It's not, you know, technically, from a practice standpoint, therapists are supposed to have medication providers as they can get their clients to, but because of the lack of availability, it's hard for some of the practitioners. And for us, you know, we're not staffed to do that because our psychiatrists are full from pretty much 9 o'clock till 5:30, seeing psychiatry patients, therapists that are in the clinic. So there's no capacity. Yeah. They are, because we're integrated, we do some of that work. So we will send, it's pretty non-complicated ADHD refill, we'll send it to medical services, if it's brief sleep meds about substance use or bipolar disorder, won't be. The hard part is to make it complicated when the medical providers want to send the person back to psychiatry. So we try to do those things to be as efficient as possible. And if it's someone who's kind of been seen pretty stable, we know them, we'll send them to medical providers. But the need's pretty high. So even, I mean, not as if the medical providers are not doing anything either. I mean, they're in primary care business as well. So we do try to do that some. Pretty cool.
So I have time for one more question.
Well, I was kind of curious, so you sort of mentioned your awareness of the challenges, the particular challenges that graduate students face.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, this is something I've thought about for a long time, but, you know, how much of the need is sort of like mental health care versus thinking about environmental changes that might possibly affect students. So I'm kind of curious about, like, how pastoring churches, thinking about how to restructure graduate students' environments to make this more positive outcomes rather than, you know, shuttling as many people to care.
Well, we do have a mental health policy group that includes some of the deans, and some of the deans from the various colleges, and we talk about these issues. The Council on Mental Health and Welfare meets a couple times a semester. Graduate student issues come up every other meeting sometimes. Graduate students talk about their experience. We try to start the conversation. You know, for us as a health service, there's definitely pushback of like, this is a faculty issue, this is a, you know, so we try to get them to think about it in that way, but we're not really empowered to get them to change the nature of it. I mean, we will have meetings, and there are a lot of people very supportive that hear us and listen, and Cornell's a big bureaucracy. A lot of people who have a lot to say in that, and, you know, we work with the graduate school, we work with folks around student support, but again, those are ongoing conversations that we all have to have. We try to have it for us.
All right. So
thank you very much
for your update. Yeah, and again, if you are interested in having your voice heard on this committee, definitely either shoot me an email, shoot him an email, to, and, you know.
GTE3.
There you go.
Hey, while I was listening to Greg, I think I saw the problem of the fitness center funding model. You open it up to more people, including people like myself, who join a gym, who pay the fees, but never go. And you won't have people showing up to compete to use the facilities. Why didn't we think of that before? There's some problem with that model, I know.
And I just want to point out, everybody who's speaking, which one of the microphones echoes a lot, especially if you're back, which goes to the back of the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. So there should be mics scattered all throughout the room, so help us with, by passing those along to whoever is speaking, and we can, you know, project a bit better.
If I'm here, everybody can hear me?
Yeah, can you hear?
Yeah.
So I know
I used this slide last time I spoke, and now it just makes me look delusional. I was gone for a week, and I came back, and I can hardly find my driveway, my house. You guys have hotel, actually. For somebody from Louisiana, it's pretty remarkable. Okay, so I'm here today in my role as co-chair of the Diversity and International Students Working Group. So I'm going to share with you some of what the group has discussed, some of what we've done, and then take any suggestions, recommendations, questions you have. And the first objective is actually fairly easy for us, because all the action items under this one are within GPSA's purview. So let me just mention these, and I'm hoping some of you will be able to provide the update. The GPSA should establish a Diversity and International Student Standing Committee. Done. Tasked with the following: communicate with groups, engage with diversity and international students issues, provide a forum to discuss diversity and inclusion, host an annual meeting for groups representing diversity and international students, and present to the GPSA annually on its work. Let me just read a few other action items, and then any of you who want to talk and information about what's being done. The GPSA should explore ways of increasing diversity within GPSA membership, to hold monthly meetings with GPS standing committee chairs, so GPSA leverage skills and contact with various committees, and increase communication between GPSA and all graduate specialty organizations to facilitate increased engagement about diversity and international students. So that's all you, not our committee, yay! Would some of you like to talk about what's being done in those areas?
one particular thing to start with is that when we had our first shed for popular season in last semester, it was extremely difficult to actually determine what organizations to contact, reach out to, because there's no listener, there's no area where all these organizations are listed together. But I did go through, you know, one by one all the registered graduate professionals. So I think that it would be very useful if we could actually have similarly research and register of member developers and update their.
So this would be a separate registration they would be asked to do?
And that or, you know, I don't know how the awards thing works, but if we could add a new category where you want to be a part of, you know, either registering for diverse organization, check that. So they're automatically added. Maybe this doesn't have another registration process. Just another step.
You know, we have such a list maintained in our office of inclusion and student engagement. Would it be helpful if we put that on our website?
Definitely.
I mean, we could ask those organizations about why they really want to be listed in that way.
And also, I thought that they should be they should self-identify with organizations. Because when I was going through, okay, well, who I invite, so I, you know, what was appropriate. Mm-hmm. I may have missed the seat that we did them. Yeah, they should be allowed to and also, it really helped me just when I go back and do that again, offices may have changed, so it's really an efficient process. So that would help very much.
Okay. Anything else to report? Hi,
I'm Dana, the chair of the program board. Today, we're actually going to host an event I've titled the GCSE Meet and Greet, and it's specifically aimed at getting some of the committee chairs together to discuss like different ways we can be reaching out to like a larger set of the graduate population and like see if they're interested in hosting an event with us. We've reached out to a couple specific groups and I think we're waiting to hear back from them. I also wanted this to be a sort of introduction to GCSA for potential GCSA field reps who are not currently field reps. So I asked the field reps to forward this invitation to anyone who might be interested in being on the GCSA. So I hope, people come tonight, and I think it will be a really good step in increasing representation and diversity.
Just to add to that, I think primarily one of the goals we are trying to aim at is to increase representation overall, like not specifically diversity, because there's still quite a few seats that are not yet filled, and I think that comes within that purview of so representation in terms of diversity, at least across fields, because I don't think all fields are equally represented because of the number of people we have. So we're focusing right now on getting all fields represented and getting all committees staffed.
Okay, objective number two, increase the support structures for international students. One of the action items had to do with mental health services and support for international students. And so that's one of the issues listed in our First Aid International Student Working Group that we have shared with Greg's group, the mental health group. And we'll partner with them in any way, but I think that also overlaps with their mission. Another action item under objective number two is one in which we actually started with a task force my first semester here, fall 2012. And out of that task force grew a newly named and new office. I say newly named. We had been for a number of years been offering academic English courses. Academic courses to graduate students on speaking, presented, and writing. But we've probably in the last year since hiring in July of 2014 a new director, Michelle Fox, who came to us from Dartmouth, we've tripled, or maybe more than tripled, the number of services and programs and support, particularly academic support, but some also social support for international students. And in case you didn't know, even if you're not an international student, I think that this will help helpful information to have. I feel like I may have passed this out once before on a related topic talking about writing support, which is on the back of this sheet. But I think there are enough of these. You don't have to keep it. I collect them and review them. But when I said we more than tripled what we've been offering beginning just this year. This describes some of the programs. I'm happy to answer any questions or elaborate on what's here. One of the best resources, I mean, you know, Shirley Vanderveer. She's a very experienced teacher and consultant with English as second language speaker. And she makes appointments, even a series of appointments over the course of the semester or year with our international students. Whatever help they might need in presenting, writing in English, she's available to coach them and consult with them. You probably already know, kind of along these lines, that in fall of 2012, the graduate school funded a new position in career services who focused at 50 Ann Padusa. How many of you know Ann Padusa? Massive Ann Padusa. I hope you all will get to know her because she can help you in many and wonderful ways. 50% of her time is focused solely on international students, and 50% of her time is focused solely on graduate students. So if you are an international graduate professional student, you're really in love with Ann's services because she's here to work solely with those groups of students. So any questions about that, about these services? We've gotten the word out in such a way that some of our U.S. students have said, we want an office for us to help us with our speaking and writing. But we kind of offer some of those services too.
Question. Yeah, it's really great. So it seems like I look at the program, it's all about like languages or learning about the language. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure whether that's the, I mean, that's probably one of the concerns of international students, but in general, like all the people just concerned about language, but do you ever do like a survey on what people think they'll lack of, for example?
Yeah, that's one of the things that Michelle, within the first year this year, and really hit the ground running with these services you see here. Well, one of the things that she wants to do at the end of this year is do a campus-wide survey of international students, as well as faculty who maybe with their graduate student advisees hear a lot, see a lot, know a lot in terms of what international graduate professional students would need. But she has kind of an array of assessments, data collection, and reporting. At the end of her first semester, she sent me a report. It was 18 pages. I've never seen such a wonderful, complete, and detailed report. She said, what else do you think we're lacking? So she is very much into assessment and reporting on these issues. And if any of you are interested in working with her, I guess, on maybe your committee to develop that survey, I thought you were going to start to ask something else that I had forgotten to mention. Recently, some of you may have gotten an email where Michelle has been reaching out to groups of non-international students. She's looking for a number of students. I think she'd be happy with 20 students to work in some way with her. I think she may be calling them ambassadors to work with her on program planning, on surveys, development, on assessment of her program. Right now she has an interim staff. I mean, she came in July and has hired two people on an interim basis who would start in August. And she's conducting really international search that starts in the fall. First week in March, she'll start with interviews, and these will be for permanent staff. Right now we have funding, the provost office has funded the program so that there will be three staff, Michelle and two other instructors. And as we can identify more resources, you know, her staff will expand. And right now they're focusing on teaching, consulting, the workshop series, and a few social activities. But as more resources come available, she wants to expand that. How many of you, any of you in here took an academic English class more than 2 years ago? Anybody? Because until 2 years ago, you could enroll in those courses if you feel the department from your school agreed to pay a fee of $1,500. Students never had to pay, but they had to get a signature of somebody who would pay $1,500 per course for them to take a course. And as you might guess, some of the departments and fields are less wealthy than others. And there were real limits to the number of students who could take these courses. And 2 years ago, the provost told graduate school, we're going to give you $40 a year. You teach as many courses as you can, do as much programming as you can with $40. So 2 years ago, the highest demand I think we had ever had was about 85, let's say in the 5 years previous, 2 years ago. The first semester we offered it, because I was managing it then, we didn't have staff on board. We went from 83 students wanting to register for section to 425 students wanting to register for these sections. And so we're all appreciative to the provost, of course he's no longer here, but the previous provost, but there's a commitment to continuing this, because the money comes to the graduate school. And I don't think you can find a more stronger committed person than Dean New to support this program. And when the resources allow it, to increase the funding for it. Okay, so if any of you are interested, even see me afterwards or email me. My email address is on the last slide. And I will put you in touch with Michelle Cox, although she's just michelle.cox@cornell.edu, and on that handout I gave you, her email address is on there as well. Because we have a particular interest in working with parts of the program. I know she would be very interested in it. Okay. Objective number three. Expand support for diversity programming for students and students of color. I'll address this up front. One of the action items recommended was that each college hire its own diversity officer. And I think a number of years ago, Cornell had that model. And while there are offices in each college, Cornell several years ago went to a model where five people from across the university in diversity and inclusion offices for the equivalent of a vice president or vice chancellor for diversity on campus. And 20% of their time, 20% of five people's time, including our associate dean for inclusion and student engagement in graduate school, 20% of her time is being part of this five-member group. And instead of one person at the vice president, vice provost level, there are five people, 20% of the time making that one FTE. And as far as I know, that's the model that Cornell will continue using. And there are a number of other schools who have begun to adopt that model after seeing Cornell. And I wasn't here when that decision was made. I've seen that group work. I know some of the advantages to that group. But I'd be happy to have conversations or put you in touch with somebody who probably knows more about the history of that and the decision of that. But it's probably one action item that this group will not take up, and that is asking for him to go back to the previous model. Let's see. Well, I don't want to say what we're not going to do with objective number three, but there are some other action items under there that we see as very viable and that we're working on. So there's two more objectives, so I'll go through those, and then you ask me questions if you want me to come back. Objective number four is to refocus on gender equality in graduate professional education. And Janet LeMay in our office, Assistant Dean for Student Life, who's also on this committee, has done a number of things just in the past year, working with the women students who are on campus, including, let's see if I'll get this right, capital G, capital P, capital W, capital N. You know what I'm talking about? Not even close to being right then. It's a consortium of Cornell women students. There are, by my count, 18 different organizations on campus that focus on women. There's women in engineering. There's women in a number of other science fields. I recently made a list of these, and I should have printed it out to bring it tonight. But Janet is a liaison with all of those groups. She has recently worked to create a new website that's up and running for students who have partners on campus, spouses and partners on campus. There's another new website for students with families, including, you know, that would include children. And on those websites, they list all the resources that female students or students with female spouses or partners might need on the range of things like lactation rooms, the child care assistance policy. And maybe since I didn't bring that list that I made, let me, I guess, Richard, could I send to you and then you would share with the group? For a report that I was doing, I pulled all that information together recently about what's going on, primarily what the graduate school has done, primarily what Janet LeMay has done, but in partnership with some other offices on campus. And I think for those of you particularly interested in the women, the topics under this, what are we doing to support women and women's groups on campus? That would be a great list if you're not aware of those new websites and those new resources. And then objective number five, increase support for the LGBTQI graduate and professional students. In fact, the most recent meeting that our group had, which was late in the fall, this was our focus. We have a new director of the center on campus. We were welcoming him as a member of our group and talking with him about what some of the issues are. He was external to Cornell before he joined the group, and it was a kind of information sharing both ways. And I imagine at our next meeting that will be another large part of our agenda because all of those action items under objective number five, especially the gathering of the data and then promoting existing resources and providing more resources are something that the work group decided they wanted to take up. So let me ask you if you have questions at this point. Oh, I forgot one other thing. Can I add it to... So objective number two, the action item was particularly let's try to do more with financial literacy education and financial awareness for our international students. So I hope you know that for all students, any of you remember seeing this in the fall? I didn't make copies because this is the fall. I checked with Jana. She said by next week they will have confirmed, they hope, they plan all of the spring, we're calling them cash course, personal finance topics. And in fact, if you're particularly interested, two workshops, March 19th and March 24th, have already been scheduled on budget and debt management and creating savings plans. And do you guys remember when I was promoting the fall financial festival October 7th? I asked for a show of hands, how many of you already started retirement? I was just blown away. And then I brought the chakra into that meeting. So I'll be careful about what kind of questions I ask where there's a reward for answering. But we also, on October 7th last year, offered a tax information session, and we're going to repeat that in March. We don't have the, there are two speakers who did it on October 7th, and they haven't confirmed the date for spring. But in response to a message that I got last week when I was out of town, and if you're in this room, I know I haven't responded to you yet, but we've been working on it, so I'm going to respond. We're going to repeat that October 7th session, but we're also going to have a team's meeting, an agenda item, to look at the admissions letter that you get and see what information we can include in the admissions letter about tax information that would apply either to everyone or by a few categories. I know that admission letter gets long once we start telling you everything we want you to know about your admission offer. But we're going to see if we can start putting some of that information in your admit package admissions letter and then continue to do these workshops. The first one that we did since my arrival 2 years ago was October 7th and fall. It will be repeated in March. So, why?
I just wanted to be the opportunity to go back to the Sacramento Commission, so you won't be doing a little bit about what.
Sure, sure. Let me pull something up here.
One more question.
Or other recommendations for centers? Oh, in lieu of the question, or any other question? I was just going to say another action item for this group is increased communication to graduate professional students regarding the bias reporting systems and opportunities to get involved. And we are creating more of that information. In fact, Sarah is doing a video in engineering, and there's no reason that we can't use that video campus-wide to address this particular action item.
So one of the things is that the undergrads have already a lot of resources that are there for the community, which are also open programs. And the problem is that with grads, we don't necessarily know of them, like the Asian American Links or ACC, things like that, which are already existing that offer support for, like, for the sense of community. Is there a way that we can consolidate all that information and also offer that or have that at some point with that, being accessible to bachelors so that we know that there are existing resources that you can use or one could use, that would be useful.
No, that's a really good point. We're sensitive to the fact that you all are not undergraduates in the same way that although we have an office of postdoctoral affairs in the graduate school, postdocs don't want to be are you a postdoc? Soon to be a postdoc?
No, I'm not even
thanks for putting that right in the next. So these are the people who served on the committee on the work. working group last year combined with the people in this year. You see some people who are postdocs and then students really write up some of the same up there. And then my email address is on the last slide. Or simply the fact that you're not undergraduate and some of the resources may not be appropriate, but a lot of them are. And we agree with you on that, you know, not reinventing the wheel. You know, one of the things you do is in your responsibilities as a teaching assistant, you are often the, you know, when we look at some of the slide training, for example, what we're talking about here, your training that's appropriate for graduate students also needs to include training for, in your role as a TA, the student comes up to you, reports something, says something, or you observe something, you're in a little bit different role than just a peer, another, you know, undergraduate, graduate student's peer. You are in a role where they see you as an authority, but one that they may feel closer to than the faculty. They will tell you things, they will tell the faculty. And I think that's a different piece we have to make sure that we're putting in the training for graduate students that will never appear in training for undergraduates. Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay. So, running a little bit behind now, so I'll ask that we keep any updates be kept as short as possible. For the executive committee, I'll say that we met with leaders of the Cornell Graduate Students Union to talk about what sort of issues they're facing and how our two organizations might potentially work together on issues of common interest. And with that, I'll turn over to operations and staffing.
Hi, everyone. So we're in the process of updating all our records for all our external appointments and committee chairs. So for assuming you hold an external appointment, could you please send me an email so that I could have a good record of it? That's the first thing. The second thing is technically, I guess, part of the operations and staffing committee. We haven't met yet, so it would be great if I could meet with all the chairs and we could talk about maybe staffing and how to improve things if we have to. I've spoken to the GPSAFC already, so I guess it's just the standing committees that I have to speak to. And it'd be great if you guys could spare some of your time. I guess that's it for me.
Appropriations?
The appropriations should be at some point in the middle of March, be releasing the application for the activity for the next 2 years, or 2 years from a year and a half from now, so between 2016 and 2018. For those years, there will be a pre-application due sometime in the middle of April or the end of April, and then they'll come in all the documents like in the beginning of fall. All the information will come out sometime in the middle of March. So the groups are already thinking, is there any bio-funding group that's going to apply for funding? Be aware of these deadlines and have that information out when they come out.
And next, communications.
Hi. No new announcements except that looking forward and really hoping that some of you would like to contribute to our buzz that will come out in the start of April to kind of advertise the semester continual events. I'd really like some help spreading a little bit where we've got different events going on as well as trying to find some people to students from
here to
the campus that might want to come up for this event. So if you're interested, please contact.
Finance Commission? That should be
Huang,
sorry.
So the Finance Commission is going to meet for the last for the special project request next week. So the funding request is due by Friday this week Friday. And with all the approval, have to be present by the next Thursday. So we're going to meet on Thursday, so you might have all the approval is ready by that time.
Okay. And student advocacy?
So we met last week, and we have a candidate that we're trying to work on for the Bannon Discuss, and we hopefully going to be Monday, April 27th, but don't write that down, it's not finished yet. Our theme is going to be very broadly communication, transparency, which we'll be talking about later, which is why I'm talking fast. We'll be part of that with an umbrella communication. And the advocacy committee is looking for people who want to get involved and help with that particular event. So if you want to get involved with the committee, and when you get involved, something to write from the get go, you know, this is an exciting project I want to work on, come to the advocacy committee and have a project that you need help. So, thank you.
Sure. Faculty awards?
Yeah, so, hello. First announcement, we have a committee. Good. Second announcement, in case you don't know about the faculty awards were put in place so that we as a graduate student community can formally recognize our advisors and educators for their outstanding commitment to graduate student mentorship. So we have a lot of really amazing faculty members here, and this is just giving educators and researchers, they also help us with our careers, that's what the awards are for. The nomination period is open now, so I will be forwarding to all of you a short message that you can, please forward this message to your respective fields and departments and even, if you want more information about the award, you can go to cornellgcba.com. There's lots of information up there for the criteria we're looking for, and also you can look at the counselors and such. If you have any questions, you can come talk to me or just shoot me an email. My name is Daniel, last name is Citrin, DTC65. Please expect questions from me, please forward it to everyone you know about our goals.
Okay. Diversity of International Students?
Here, just a quick update. We're looking for our students and experts to talk to work again, and I think we had an excellent idea to come to an event for the GBSD on issues based on students of color at the university. So, currently we're identifying the students very actively that are focused on that. And I also just wanted to remind everyone that we received a survey from DU that laid out your doctoral student experience now, if you're coming to the doctoral students. So I'd like to remind everybody to please not only fill out the statistics, writing whatever it is what they can, but please take the time to share personal anecdotes and experiences that you've had, because I think those have a lot more rich data and actually give us direction of what needs to be better. So please do fill that out.
Program board?
I have three updates. We have a date for the grad ball. It's April 25th from 6 to 11 p.m. I believe it will be at the beginning of the Earth again, and the theme will probably be Earth Day related. We just really love that venue, and we know that a lot of you do. We have an event tonight, the meet and greet, and it begins right after the meeting from the Big Red Barn. So if you want to tell me more about any organizations you're on that are under staff, or like any ideas the organization might have to share with our organization, that would be a great opportunity. You should also have forwarded that invitation to any prospective GPSA field rep, and it's not too late to text your friends and invite them if you're interested in serving on the GPSA or any of our committees in the future. This would be a great opportunity for them to learn about that. The third update is that we have a meeting next Monday at 5:30 p.m. in the library of this building.
Right, and for the sustainability committee, we'll be meeting on the first week of March, and I'll send out a little invitation to our general listserv to get participation for that. And with that, we are now only 3 minutes behind, so we'll move into a breakout session on transparency and shared governance. Catherine, you want to say anything about it, or?
I guess I'll get that. So this is going to be a continuation from the two resolutions we passed in last semester and this semester. The last one is about TALA stipend difference, and that raises concern about transparency during the process and how shared governance is involved, but not to the amount that we want to. And the second one is the reduced tuition for 6 year or later students, which again, it's like graduate students not that involved in the entire process. So this breakout session is about, we're trying to form small groups where we talk about what we can do as a whole of the GPSA to maybe propose a resolution on how we can increase transparency and allow more open and broad conversation with demonstrative staff. Yeah.
So we'll go ahead and so for 15 minutes, we'll break off into smaller groups to hold the discussion, and then we'll have some time at the end for a person from each group to share any thoughts from that particular group. So we'll do this section. This one we'll divide in half at the projector. So Alex, you're with them, and Amy on the other side. And then this will be another section. Anyone from the back would like to come in and participate, join any of the groups. We have plenty of seats down here. So things to think about for the discussion is, what does transparency mean when you hear transparency? What comes to your mind? And what do you think is a more appropriate level of transparency towards shared governance? So again, please break out into smaller groups, and I hope there will be some fruitful discussions.
Administration. Thank you. Knock your cable.
What?
No, I want to give.
I don't think people heard you.
Thank you everyone for participating in the discussion. I just know the section I was sitting with, we had a very, I thought, helpful sort of sharing of ideas. So now we'll go around the room and sort of have someone from each of the different sections sort of give a brief overview of what was discussed. So I guess we'll start over here.
So we brought up certain principal for a previous decision that ostensibly, so funding passed this year in the way that resolutions get passed, and then committees are formed, and there are bodies on committees, but those people on committees can't necessarily come back and talk to larger groups of graduate students, and trying to figure out how to articulate with administration what representation, what transparency looks like when you have different versions, one being a body in the room that is a graduate student, is graduate student involvement, versus a graduate student can go back and have conversations with information with other graduate students. So it's really getting at the dynamics of what constitutes representation and transparency. Also concerns over legally what university, what can and can't be shared. So issues of confidentiality, whether referring to the budget, as Richard reminded me about, or other reasons that might necessarily be because of the budget. So trying to understand that while we're having this conversation, we're also navigating parameters that are larger than just the graduate school.
Great. Thank you. From this section here.
We were discussing an issue that we had. We were talking about transparency and shared difference and what shared difference means to different people, kind of is going to sound pretty well defined. We were just kind of discussing that a little bit. Because as a healthy, maybe, whether we can sample, you think there's different people on the university who have a different idea of what shared difference means. And some say that may be sort of like check or veto power. Real power in governing the university, whereas I think there's a consensus that TPSA and other kind of shared governance groups at our level don't really have any actual governing ability within the university, except for maybe the way to voice an opinion. But what level of that governance is really hard to say. And you kind of watch out for the union and so on.
Moving on to this group over here.
So we actually identified two issues, and one of them has to do with, first of all, the limited representational power that we actually have. Since most of our, we don't have a lot of schools left, a lot of schools are not represented by the GPSA. Kind of, I think the question that arises out of that, which is how much can we not expect, but how strong our role in shared governance can be taken, but we're not even sure what our representational set is really. And so one thing we could think about is how to improve that and increase that. Another issue that we discussed is actually delineating or trying to understand what governmental groups at the GPSA level and SA level adherence to institutions are expected to and allowed to do on their campuses. So one suggestion I have is send out a survey to some peer institutions and see what sort of capacities they have on their campuses. Do they have veto powers or anything like that? Do they have a vote when it comes to certain decisions? What sorts of information are they privy to and meetings are they invited to on the administrative level? One resource that someone suggested is talking to people who visit the Ivy Summit, because maybe there's some documentation there as to what other groups the GPS can do at here. So that might be a first step in sort of getting some data to bring to the administration and saying, here is what other schools are doing, and we want to know why we aren't allowed to do this, or we want to be inclusive. We want justification or change. All
right, and last.
In thinking about the context of some of the decisions that have occurred probably in the last year and a half or so, especially those related to graduate students' financial situation, academic situation, and anything that's sort of considered mandatory, and that's the problem in the category of CAR, differentials, tuition rates, and mandatory health fees. I think those sorts of decisions in particular, we might think about a model similar to public governance in general, which is like an open comment period where there's actually public notice. That's sort of a decision that we would consider and provide the opportunity for comments in a open and transparent public way, as well as more transparent notification when decisions are made final, and that would be a more appropriate model that even bypasses some of the structural things related specifically to the GPSA, but would also lead to more transparent conversations.
Okay. So, again, thanks everyone for your participation in the discussion. We will be meeting with Dean Newth later this week, and I'm sure that we'll be raising a lot of these concerns with her, and we'll see how we can move forward with trying to, you know, increase transparency in meaningful ways here at Cornell. So, with that, we'll move into open forum, and I got an email about the...
I'm currently a graduate research and teaching fellow for the Center for Teaching Excellence, and we've got some events coming up that may be of interest to those of you who are interested in improving your teaching and about teaching. So one of them is the UY Teaching Conference. Have any of you attended one of these in the past? Yeah. So it's an opportunity to kind of talk with your peers about teaching. There are different sessions that you can go to. There are two plenary speakers, and if you go and attend for this whole day, you get a certificate, and you can also start working on other teaching certificates that you can get, which you can put on your resume and build different teaching skills.
I mean, one of the things is that if anyone of you has never like recorded your video of teaching, they do that at one of the sessions is called the TEP, where they actually record you teaching for 5 minutes and they send the video to you. And so if you're interested in something like that, that'd be a really cool experience to learn about how your voice projects out in public, which you are not always conscious about.
So this is happening this Saturday, February 28th. Even if you can't attend, I'm just going to pass these around, and if you could put them up in your department just to alert other graduate students to the opportunity, that would be great. You do have to pre-register online, which you can do on the CTE website, which is, I think, just cte.cornell.edu.
And there's free food.
Number one way to get students out.
And the plenary talks are really, really good, so you should try to go to them and the other workshops too.
Some of the other things this semester are there are pizza and conversation sessions that you can go to where you will get free pizza and conversation. You can get a certificate from this, but they have some really great topics like motivating students to take charge of their learning, using mini lectures to engage students, things like that. And then there are also Get Set workshops, which you can use to get certificates and to get set, yeah, for your teaching. And then finally, if you are interested in becoming a GRTF, you can apply to do that next year. It's a $1,000 fellowship, and you spend a year working on putting together a teaching portfolio. You take a couple of pedagogy courses, do a research project based on your teaching, and have some really great conversations with your peers about different strategies, different things that work in the classroom. So we'll hand these out as well. If you could just put these up in the department. And if you have any questions, you can feel free to email me. My email is kas465. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
A brief follow-up. I personally, and I know there are other members of the body who would actually like CE to come to us and talk about the resources they have. You are representing them now, like you're all the way up and going through them. I think it would be great if they could
come. Yeah, we've done that in the past. We've come back again.
Yeah,
so many things happening. I know Richard has already a few schedules. But be surprised. Yeah. Whenever you guys are interested, let us know. And we'll be here.
Yeah. I was going to put out one thing. This is not something that I will do. However, there's a lot of conversation about the issue with fitness centers. Something that we have talked about
several times is whether or not it makes sense to increase the student activity fees to buy membership passes for all graduate students. Now, there is a potential process for doing this which involves essentially an organization becoming Byline funded that requires working very closely with our appropriations chair to figure out how to make it logistically possible. And basically, I kind of know some of the structure that would need to happen. The biggest thing is actually getting the signatures from 10% of graduate students in support of becoming, like, a new organization becoming Byline funded and then submitting a proposal. There, I suppose, is also an alternative route of restructuring completely.
You could do that. I mean, there are a couple of interesting discussions that will pop up out of that. But I mean, it helps see at least now, because you can get reimbursed for going to the gym. If you go enough number of times, you will get reimbursed if you are conscious. They'll pay you the whole money back. So if you're, because of that one way of like using the gym for free, essentially. Yeah.
Well, it would be spread out. It would be spread out. So basically, everybody would pay a fee smaller than what individual people pay at the gym. Look, none of this is decided. I'm just saying that if someone has the energy and wherewithal to try to figure out this puzzle, they have to figure it out now before we do another run and something to be scheduled. And basically, we can't reconsider it for that reason.
I was just going to say that Oxford College has implemented an online signature gathering thing for you. That's a referendum process that we're all going to gather here. And that's what we're going to have to do. We're supposed to have that happen.
Okay. Anything else for open forum?
I mean, in the issue of appropriating funding, one thing that has come up, which is something that GPCI might have addressed, is funding for spouses of grad students through the appropriation, like, or through the activity fee. Currently, so this activity fee is only for grad students, but if there are spouses of grad students who want to have activities, it's not much, like, too much, maybe like $2,000 a year, which we should be, we can handle it, but it's just that officially the policy that we can't do that for non students. And we might have to reword that, or I don't know what the opinion would be, but we can consider that. And that's something, if you have any ideas, let me know, and we can think about that.
Okay. Anything else for open forum?
Come to the party at the DRB.
All right, and on that, is there a motion to adjourn? Second. All right, we adjourn.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.